we're going to continue our sessions on Sunday mornings leading up to Christmas, and we're talking about Emmanuel. So we've looked at God is with us. That's what the word Emmanuel means. Then we looked at Emmanuel is revealed in us and through us. We looked at the fact that Emmanuel broke God's silence. It broke. God can never be silent over your world again because Emmanuel broke his silence. And today we're going to look at the traits of Emmanuel, or if you want a kind of a different title for it, it's Emmanuel is dot, dot, dot. Okay, the dots are important. All right, and so I'm going to be talking to you about who Emmanuel is. And I want to ask you the question to begin with this morning. Do we ever truly know someone? Okay, maybe those of you who have been married for a very long time, maybe for some of you it just seems like a very long time, but for those of you who might have been married a long time, I was talking to Dennis and Violet Clark a few weeks ago, and they just celebrated 54 years, was it? And wow, that is just awesome, isn't it? And I wanted to get together with them and ask them their secrets, but do you ever really truly know someone? If it'd be great for them to be here this morning to see if after 54 years, they could still surprise each other with something about themselves. Do you ever really know someone? Because the thing is, maybe Richard and Emma could tell us that. Maybe they could come and share this morning. But do you ever really, really know someone to the point that someone couldn't surprise you? Because at the beginning of a relationship, a friendship, or a dating relationship, you never lay all your cards on the table, do you? You never meet with that man of your dreams, girls, and tell them everything on day one, because usually they would go running for the hills. And we don't have any in Lincolnshire, so they've had to run for a very, very long way. Okay, you don't sit there and bare your soul and tell them everything. Okay, I can remember when Matt and I first started dating. Matt was very careful which members of his family he let me meet. Okay, I was talking to his sister last week, and I went over to visit her, and we were talking about the time where Matt and I had only been seeing each other. In fact, it was still a secret, like Liz didn't even know at this point. And one night we were like, right, what shall we do? And Matt said, listen, let's go, and I want to take you to meet my sister. And I didn't meet many others of the family for quite a while. Okay, but he took me to meet his sister because he thought that she was the least insane person in his family. And also she had the cute kids. All right. So if there was a way to kind of get to my heart, do the cute kids thing. Okay. But you kind of choose very carefully what you talk about, what you let someone in on when you first start dating. There were some people I never met till our wedding reception. And there's probably a reason for that. And there were some people that Matt didn't either. I can remember one of my lasting memories of our wedding day. Is when we, you do the big kind of procession out of the church. And normally you come out of the church and there's confetti flying and it's great. We came out of a church to a cloud of smoke because two of my uncles didn't realize how long a Pentecostal wedding was going to be and had got a little bit fed up. So they snuck out before us. Matt had never met them before our wedding day. We'd already said our vows. It was way too late. He could not now get out of it. But we came out and two of my uncles were like, having a fag outside the church, right outside the door. And like, we opened the door. We kind of walked out, and they were wearing masks. Like, who is that? I said, I'll tell you later, love. And we just kind of carried on with the day. You don't let someone in on everything when you are first getting to know them, because you want them to accept you and like you. Okay, so you show them the good side. You show them, this is who you want to fall in love with. This is the person you want to be friends with. This is the person you want to go out for coffee with. And we show people the good side of us. And we don't ever really let them know who we are. The one thing that I love about God is that hundreds of years before Jesus came, he let us in on who he was. He let us in on what Jesus was going to be like. And we're going to read from Isaiah. And we've looked at these words a bit over the last few weeks. Okay, Isaiah 9 and verse 6. It says this in the NIV version. Then I'm going to read it out of the Voice, which I love this verse in the Voice version. It says in the NIV, "For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." God tells us ahead of time, this is who I'm sending. This is who he's going to be. He's going to be Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. This is who I am sending to you as the Messiah. The voice puts it like this. Isaiah 9 verse 6, hope of all hopes, dream of our dreams. A child is born, sweet breathed. A son is given to us, a living gift. And even now with tiny features and dewy hair, he is great. The power of leadership and the weight of authority will rest on his shoulders. His name? His name we'll know in many ways. He will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Dear Father Everlasting, Ever Present, Never Failing, Master of Wholeness, Prince of Peace. God told us the traits of the one he was sending ahead of time so we'd know him when he came. God told us this is what Jesus is going to be like. It wasn't a bit of a cloak and dagger thing, you know, of I'm like this until you really get to know me, then I'm like this. God told us exactly what Jesus was going to be like, the traits that he was going to have hundreds of years before he came. And Isaiah records who Jesus was going to be. God revealed Jesus before anyone ever met him. Jesus didn't become what society made him. He was and he is who his Father said he would be. And he didn't deviate from that plan once when he lived on this earth. And there were four traits that were described in Isaiah that tell us about Emmanuel or tell us about Jesus. These were them. Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace. God let us in on what Emmanuel would be like. He gave us an insight on how amazing this child and this man would be. And so what I want to do this morning is take those four traits and just expand on them a little bit and explain them a little bit, what they mean and what they can mean to us today. Because the Emmanuel that came all those years ago is the Emmanuel that is here this morning. It's the Emmanuel that's going to walk into your workplace tomorrow with you. It's the Emmanuel that's going to be there when you close the door tonight and maybe you've got things going on in your mind. That same God, that same Emmanuel is going to be with you. And I want to take these four traits, these four names that Isaiah gives Jesus, and I want to explain them a bit so you know today the God that you are taking away with you. The Emmanuel that came and was here all those years ago. We know what we're getting when we leave this place today and we take God with us and God goes before us and God is in everything that we do. This is the God who is here. So number one, we're told that he is Wonderful Counselor. The Hebrew here literally means supernatural wonder. That's what it means. When you look at that word wonderful, it means supernatural wonder. Pele is the word used. And the great thing about this word that is used in the Hebrew is the fact that it only ever describes God. This word is never used to describe human beings. It is never used to describe human behavior. It is only used in the Hebrew and in the Psalms and in the Bible whenever it's used. It's only ever used to describe God. So what Isaiah is saying here is that this supernatural wonder, this wonderful counselor, the only person that could ever be that is God. Which re-emphasizes Emmanuel, fully God, fully man. The only person that you would call this to is God. It does not describe anything we can do as humans. It doesn't describe anything that happens through human beings. It only ever describes God. It indicates perfect wisdom. It indicates absolute supernatural wonder. Jesus came to bring the message revealing God's plan of salvation. And the way he did that and the way God used him in that, okay, was perfect wisdom. And as we read the gospel, we see this trait of Emmanuel revealed. Wonderful counselor, supernatural wonder. We see this trait in the gospel revealed through Jesus. Jesus healed many. He gave wisdom to those who listened. I love the way Jesus used to talk. He used to sit people down and tell them stories. Stories that we still tell today because they're full of wisdom. And if we can grasp a hold of them, you know, they're full of the wisdom of God. And he used to sit down and he used to teach people through stories. And he used to say, you know, there was a man and he was scattering seeds. And he used to begin to kind of expound wisdom about the things of God, but not in the way that it had happened before, okay, but in a way that people could understand and could grasp a hold of. This wonderful counselor is seen in Jesus throughout the whole of his life. This supernatural wonder is seen everywhere where he goes. And I want to suggest to you today, friends, that actually he still is wonderful counselor today. That he wasn't just in Bible times where Jesus would come and we would see supernatural things, but actually it's still for today. And I just want Susie to come up. We're going to have a bit of audience participation this morning, okay? And it was pre-planned. But I just want Susie to come up and just tell us just about the last 3 weeks of your life.
Okay, morning. Many of you know that I went for a procedure less than 3 weeks ago. The leaders were very polite and didn't tell you exactly what, but I don't mind sharing. For the last 5 years, I've been coming to consultants at various hospitals with various problems with mental health, with PMS, and with heavy bleeding. And what that has come about was finally I was allowed to have a full hysterectomy, including ovaries and tubes and cervix. Now, that is huge surgery. I'm a nurse. That is huge. And I was desperate to have this surgery, so you can see where I came from beforehand. Now, as a nurse, I've seen people having huge surgery, huge abdominal surgery, and how they come out afterwards, and it's, how's this going to go? How's this going to go? But I had a complete faith in the Lord. And when you all prayed over me in church before my surgery that Tuesday, I realized how different my relationship with the Lord is to what it was a few years ago when I should have been asking for help, when all these problems have been going on. Because you ask, you believe, and you receive. And that's where I was. I went into theatre awake as well, because I asked for a spinal, because I didn't want to go under. So I got to chat during. Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, let me see. Oh, very good, yeah. It looks like an upside-down chicken, if you wonder, and they take it out. I didn't have my phone to take a selfie, but it was kind of like the home of my children, so I wish I had done it. I missed out on that bit. But I went in with confidence because of the prayer, because of knowing that God was alongside me and knowing that you were all praying for me. Now, a couple of people did see me after surgery. There'd been some errors in some of the care. Surgery went well. That was okay. They'd forgotten to give me any pain relief. So my spinal wore off within about 5 to 15 minutes. And I went from sat and eating toast and drinking a lovely cup of tea because I was starving by then. To writhing in agony, absolutely writhing in agony. Now, if you understand how the surgery works, I have to cut a lot of ligaments because you're all joined up inside. So my hips, my back, my bottom, my shoulders, my stomach, my legs, my thighs, everything was agonizing. And I couldn't pray. I couldn't do it. I couldn't clear my mind enough for even a second to just have that relationship with God that I'm so used to just having. I can just chat, you know, it's a two-way thing. I've got to know him pretty well. He knows me pretty well. And Joe would message, I don't know, it's all a bit hazy, but I think you'd message me around that point, and I was trying to text like that. And then it took me about 15 minutes. I can't remember. It was hard. I couldn't really concentrate. It's probably something that, yeah, I'd be brought up like, look at her when she's high. But shortly after that, I also got an email through that had gone out to all of you saying, Susie's fine. I think you must have put less than I did. Susie's fine. She's in a bit of post-operative pain. Please pray. Now, around that same time, my consultant came into the room and was a bit took aback. Ooh, maybe we should ring the anaesthetist. Does she need to go back to surgery? Have I cut something I shouldn't have done? It was all a bit of a concern. But I was given some pain relief and everything got better. And now that's not to do with the pain relief. That's to do with your prayer. And I believed it was your prayer. And I think, as Joe had written in the email as well, she feels comforted by that. And I did, because I knew God was at work. So fast forward about 6 or 7 hours, consultant comes back the next morning and looks at me in shock. He's like, oh, you were a bit different to what I saw you yesterday. It wasn't expected. And he said, I guess you won't be recommending a hysterectomy to anyone. I said, no, I'll be recommending they'll have pain relief. What I should have said, and I get seen before Christmas to say this, is I should have believed in the prayer that was happening. Because that is what happened. I felt so covered by God that when I came back around after the painful day, I realised that he was going to heal me, and he has. Let me tell you what's happened since. But I needed that reminder that I'd had pretty major surgery, because what it means is I shouldn't just dance up and trot out of hospital like this and go and do various things, like lifting my children and doing the ironing. Elaine's been doing that. Don't tell her I'm better, because she might stop. Can't drive, can't lift things. But so it was a reminder to take care of myself, because God expects our common sense as well. So I was going to take care of myself. So I had surgery on the Tuesday. I came home on the Thursday. They'd still mucked up in hospital over my pain relief, so I just had to trust God on that bit. Worked fine. By Saturday, I'm at the Methodist church packing smiley bags. Tina saw me and was like, oh, what are you doing here? I'm like, I'm fine. I'm doing light duties, I promise. Sunday, I dare come to church because Jo said she'd throw me out if she saw me. So I went to the Remembrance Parade and sat in St. James instead. and it has just got on full strength from there. You know, I'm doing normal stuff. It is a miraculous recovery. It is miraculous. I shouldn't be able to stand and wander about and do everything I'm doing and care for my children and cook dinner for my husband's birthday and all this stuff. I shouldn't be able to do it yet. But in God's miracle, I can. And I thank you for your prayer. And I encourage you to get that relationship with God and get the conversation going, because he hears and he knows what's best. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I didn't actually say throw her out. Those were not my words. Pastoral care kind of taken out of context. I feel that. that's why I don't, you know, do it that often. Anyway, so God is... She walked up St. James's spire. I'm looking at this photo on Facebook thinking, I go to Meadow Hall for one day and she goes up all of the steps. But less than 3 weeks after... the operation. God is just doing something. Do you know what? God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And he said, and he will be called, this is Jesus, Wonderful Counselor, Supernatural Wonder. He is the one who is going to heal. He is the one who is going to bring wisdom. He is the one who gives direction. He is the one who shows us the best way to live. And Jesus not only spoke about this, but he modeled it as he lived among us. He's Wonderful Counselor. Number two, he's Mighty God, it says in Isaiah. And basically what this means is that in the man Jesus, all of God's nature and character would exist. That's what that means. That as he walked the earth, that all of God's nature and his character would exist. So I want to look at maybe some traits of God's nature and character and have a look at how they were kind of lived out by Jesus. Number one, he was holy. This means that he was set apart. The root of this word means to pronounce or observe as clean. Holy means that you are appointed, that you are consecrated, that you are dedicated, that you have been purified, that you are sanctified. And that word basically means as if I never sinned. So Jesus walked the earth holy. He walked it perfect. And in Psalms, the book of Psalms describes God as holy a lot. Okay, if you read through the book of Psalms, you know, we're told in Psalms a lot that God is holy. And the same word that is used to describe God's holiness is used when God speaks to his people and calls them to be holy. So it's not like God says, this is my version of holy, and then why don't you take a lesser version, okay? When God calls his people, when God calls those who are walking the earth to be holy, he uses the same word. And you know what? Jesus personified this as he walked on the earth. He was holy. He was set apart. He was appointed. He was dedicated to the cause of God that he came to fulfill. Never once did he deviate from it. Jesus was completely and utterly holy. Jesus lived as a man and he lived holy, righteously, and in perfect submission to his Father. And this gave him the title Mighty God. Secondly, he was faithful. We're told time and time again in the Bible that God is faithful. Jesus came to reconcile God and man. And he did not stop until he did that. He was faithful to what God had asked him to do. This is why he's called Mighty God, because all of the characteristics and nature of God was living in one man as he walked the earth. We're told time and time again that God is faithful, and so was Jesus. Jesus was faithful in the good and in the bad. He was faithful when it was easy, and he was faithful when it was hard. And his faithfulness brought God's salvation for generations to come. Thirdly, he was compassionate. The Bible tells us that God is slow to anger and he is abounding in love. God is compassionate, and Jesus was. Jesus had compassion on all those that he met, and his compassion, I love this, saw past their sin, and he saw their reconciliation to God. He didn't see the mess ups that they were making. He didn't see the things that they were doing that were wrong. Jesus had the capacity to see past what would disqualify them and allow forgiveness to transform their life. I love that about God. We look at what might disqualify. You know, a lot of people, you know, say the church looks at what would disqualify someone. Actually, I say forgiveness transforms someone. So let's see past that and let's see what God can do through their lives. If you look at the story of the woman at the well, the woman caught in adultery, Zacchaeus, you know, if you look at all of these stories, Jesus saw past what would disqualify them from having a relationship with God. And he allowed forgiveness and the Holy Spirit to transform their lives. And that's what we're meant to do today, because that's what Jesus did all the time, which gives him the title Mighty God. Everything of God's character and nature flowing through him. The third thing that Isaiah says is that he was everlasting Father. The Voice puts it this way, and I love this. It says he'll be called Father Everlasting, ever-present, never-failing. Ever-present, never-failing. Do you know what? Over your life this morning and over my life, there is a Father, there is a God who is ever-present, never-failing. Even in the stuff that's tough, God is there, ever-present, never failing. And just three things that I think speak of a Father's love. Jesus brought the Father heart of God to mankind. He didn't just come as a baby. He came as a father. He brought the Father heart of God to everybody that he met. The first thing is he was loving. Everywhere Jesus went, he left a trail of love with the people who encountered him. Healing, restoring, speaking, touching, stopping, all shouts of love to those who are receiving it. We live in a world today where that isn't seen as important. We're conditioned to plug into a device whilst we're out. We're conditioned to avoid eye contact, to rush and not stop, to avoid contact with others in our business. Yesterday, if you've seen my Facebook post, I went for my yearly visit to Meadow Hall. Okay, so it started off with Starbucks. And me and my mum have this conversation every year. And we've been doing this probably for about 10 years, maybe a little bit more. And every year we have the same conversation at 10:15, right? So we'll be sat in Starbucks. I'll have my gingerbread latte, all right? And my mum will have the weakest coffee imaginable, okay? And we'll be sitting there drinking our coffee. And we'll say this to each other. It's not too bad this year, is it? It's okay. It's quite calm. And we sat there yesterday and we went, but we'll wait till 2:00 and we'll make that decision again. And this is what I've noticed about human beings, especially when you go shopping 3 weeks before Christmas at Meadow Hall. Okay. This is what happens. No one looks at anyone. Everybody's walking along looking at their phone so they can't see anyone else around them. Okay. And so they shove into you and they barge you out of the way and they think it's your fault. Okay, we were stood in a queue, a very long queue with very, very slow cashiers, but we'll leave that one. And we were stood in this queue, and the amount of people that just barged past and just banged us and knocked us, there was a bit in me that went, the next person that knocks my mum, I'm going to knock them out. And then I realized that wasn't very Jesus-like. There's something in people today. We've got our heads down all the time. But this was Jesus. His head was up. And he was looking around because he brought the fatherhood of God, the father heart of God to mankind. And he looked at people and he stopped and he didn't barge past them and he made them feel important. You know, even, you know, the little boy who brought his lunch and Jesus used his lunch, he made him feel important. He stopped what he was doing. There was 50,000 people out there and he stopped for a little boy. Are we getting this? Because you know what? In a crowd of 50,000 people, if my son came up to me, I don't care who those people are, I will stop what I am doing. And for two kids on the planet, I will probably stop whatever I am doing. But Jesus, for anyone on the planet, would stop what he was doing, would eyeball them, and would just talk to them. And we don't live in a world where it's like that anymore. You know, we plug into our devices. We shut ourselves away. I do that. I go to the gym. I don't always really look at people. That's probably because I can't talk to them because I'm too out of breath. But we plug ourselves in and we just get on with our lives. Do you know what? That's not the Father heart of God. Jesus came and he was loving and he took time for people. Jesus was protective. I love the fact that we read in the Bible stories where Jesus stood between the accused and their accusers. When you read the story of the woman who'd been caught in adultery, Jesus would not agree with what she had been doing. But this is what Jesus did. The guys were over here picking up the rocks, getting ready to throw them at her because they said that what she'd done was something that she should be killed for. She's over here probably cowering because she knows what is coming. And this is where Jesus stands. He stands in the middle. He brings the Father heart of God and he protects a woman who, yes, according to law, according to Jewish law, according to the morals of Scripture, had done something wrong. And Jesus stands in the middle of her and the guys over there picking up the rocks. And he stands there and he says, let him who's without sin cast the first stone. And the Bible tells us that one by one, they dropped their rocks and they went on their way. He stands in the middle. He doesn't have to agree with lifestyle to stand in the middle and to protect. This morning, I don't care where we've come from. I don't care, you know, in a lot of ways what it is we're involved in. This morning, if you are in a situation where maybe you have, you know, messed up a little bit, do you know where Jesus stands? He doesn't stand over at the people that are getting ready to accuse you and to judge you. He stands in the middle. And the Bible tells us that he stretched out his arms just over 2,000 years ago and he died on a cross so he could stand in the middle, so God could come and stand in the middle of you and those who accuse you. And this is what he says to those who accuse, let him who is without sin cast the first stone. You see, he's everlasting Father. He is everlasting Father, ever present and never failing. Jesus didn't agree with her lifestyle, but that didn't mean that he couldn't protect her. And you know what? This morning, church, we don't have to agree with everything that people do to extend the Father's love to them. And in a harsh world, we need to be a church that protects the vulnerable because that will always come before our opinions. Will always come before our opinions. There are ways that God tells us to live and we can never, ever, you know, get away from that. There are things that God says are right and there are things that God says are wrong. But even in the midst of all of that, our first thing should be to protect. Because that's what a father does. And then Jesus supplied the needs of those around him. I've already mentioned it this morning, but, you know, Jesus had a crowd of people that were listening to him preach. We're told, you know, 5,000 men, plus women and children. They didn't have small families back then, so there were a lot of people. And they were all sitting and listening to Jesus talk, and tea time came. And all of a sudden, you know, the disciples are going, they're hungry. I think possibly what the disciples meant was, we're hungry. Okay, and let's send them out and let's send them away and let's get them something to eat. And this is what Jesus said. He said, no. He says, come on, we're going to feed them. Because the Father's heart says, I need to supply the basic needs for the people that are around me. If I went to my parents' house, they wouldn't send me to another house if I was hungry. They would feed me there. And they would do all that they could to feed me there. The Father heart of God cannot see people go hungry, whether that's physically or spiritually. And as his disciples today, we need to be the ones showing the same heart. Do you know what? Downstairs in our foyer, there's a box. And in that box, we can bring things for the food larder in our town. Do you know in the kind of getting ready for Christmas and in the we're getting everything in and we need to make sure we've got stuff. Usually we all have an abundance. Why don't we overflow that box? Why don't we carry on? Jesus was called Everlasting Father. And we're today told that we should be Christ-like. Why don't we show our community the Father heart of God that says, you know what, I want to supply your need. And not only supply your need, but do something very kind along with it as well. Why don't throw in some chocolate and some nice things? He was everlasting Father. And then finally, and this for me has been something that has brought me to tears as I have looked at it. Probably going to go there again, but it says this. He'll be called Prince of Peace. And out of all the names for Jesus, do you know what? This brings everything to where it should be. He's the Prince of Peace, and we live in a world today where there is no peace. We live in a world today where peace is hard to come by, and this is what Isaiah said Jesus would be. He would be the Prince of Peace. God is the Father of Peace. Jesus is the Prince of Peace. The Voice puts it this way, and this is what got me. He's the Master of Wholeness, the Prince of Peace. The Master of Wholeness. For me, this brings such an amazing image to me. Do you know what? There are so many ways that say they can bring wholeness to us. But I want to suggest this to you. In fact, more than suggest it, actually declare it, that there is only one who has mastered wholeness, and his name is Jesus. There is only one who is the Master of Wholeness. And this morning, if we're living broken, if you're living broken, if you're living with brokenness in your life, there is only one place that you will find wholeness. And that is with Jesus Christ. There is only one Master of Wholeness. And I'm a trained counselor. I love some of the ways that people can go through and find help and find someone to be there to help them put life back together. But I know that without Jesus involved, that will only last for a certain length of time. The only master to wholeness that there has ever been and that there ever will be is Jesus Christ. The only one that can come and seriously bring wholeness to your life is him. We look for wholeness in all of the wrong places and we wonder why it doesn't work. There's only one person that can really bring you wholeness. And like I said, some of the other tools that we have are brilliant and I believe in them. And I have watched it work, you know. I was just looking at Facebook the other day, and my friend Jess Brammel was on there, and just her story of, you know, she was anorexic, and then God just brought her wholeness, and through counseling and through City Hearts and through the help that they could bring her, it was incredible. But I know she would say this, that all of that was good, but the one who brought her wholeness was Jesus Christ. There's a nursery rhyme that we teach our kids and it's called Humpty Dumpty. And this is how it ends. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again. I've been thinking about that nursery rhyme this week, and you know, I used to throw my kids around to that nursery rhyme, and I just sat there this week. I thought that is really, really, really depressing. I have, you know, done that nursery rhyme with my kids, and you know, Humpty fell off the wall, and you throw him down, and you know, but no one could put Humpty back together again. No one could do it. The best that the world had to offer could not put him back together again. And I want to say to you today that the best that the world has to offer can't bring us wholeness, can't bring our world wholeness, and can't bring us as individuals wholeness. The only one that can truly do that and to have it lasting is Jesus Christ. The only one that can bring you wholeness both in the present and for eternity is Jesus Christ and what he did on the earth. Our wholeness can only come from the one who made us, who knows us, and who really Caesar's. And I just wrote this time, I want to read it as I wrote it. This week, just as I was thinking about this, I just put, Emmanuel is the one who can give you wholeness. You don't have to work for it, you have to receive it. It's a gift out of love, not wages for work done. It's through faith and by grace that we can become what we should always have been. It's nothing that we can work for, it's everything that we need to receive. I want to say to you this morning that our wholeness, the only place we can get it is from the person that Isaiah called the Master of Wholeness, the Prince of Peace. And this morning, I don't know if you're living your life without peace. I don't know if you're living life in brokenness. But this morning, I want to tell you that there is a journey ahead of you that can take you to wholeness, that can take you to a place where God can, you know, we have a memory, so we always know what's happened in our life, but we can come to a place where God sets us free to live and be who he has called us to be, where we have wholeness. And it comes from this man, Jesus, the wonderful counselor, the mighty God, the faithful one, the compassionate one, the holy one, everlasting Father, ever present, never failing. The one who loves you, the one who wants to protect you, the one who wants to supply for you. We've already heard from Sue this morning. The perfect job, the perfect hours, the perfect everything. God supplies. He still does it today. I've loved the way that the whole service has gone for this morning, working up to this point. And then he is the master of wholeness, the prince of peace. This morning, you may have looked in many different places for your wholeness. And I know what it's like to be broken. But I also know what it's like to have Jesus come alongside and make me whole. And this morning, that same Emmanuel that Isaiah talked about, that same Emmanuel that lived on the earth, that same Emmanuel that you may look at the person sat next to you and think he's done it for them, that same Emmanuel is here for you. The mighty God, the wonderful counselor, the everlasting Father, and the Prince of Peace, the Master of Wholeness. And this morning, I don't know who you need him to be, but I do know that God revealed him to us before he ever came, because he wanted us to know who he was. It's not like God is going, we'll save this bit because they might not like that. God wants you to know who Jesus was and who he is today, because he wants him to be relevant in your life and in mine. So I don't know who you need him to be, but let's all just close our eyes a moment. I don't know who you need him to be this morning, but I do know he's here. I do know that he wants to be with you. I do know that he wants to get involved. I do know that he wants to bring you wholeness. And maybe you've tried other places, and this morning God's going, if you just come here, let me work alongside you. Let me help you. If that's you this morning, something that I've mentioned about who Jesus is, you need that in your life. I just want you to stand where you are, because I want to pray for you. The wonderful counselor, the mighty God, the everlasting Father, ever present, never failing, the Prince of Wholeness, the Prince of Peace. If you're living broken and without peace this morning, the only place you're going to find long-lasting peace is in the arms of Jesus Christ.